You know, apples, well, Eve and apples have been put together so many times, I'm kind of tired of the joke. And actually what's true is the apple in the so-called Garden of Eden wasn't likely an apple. In fact, apples were never even mentioned in the Bible. The only thing that was mentioned in the Bible was the forbidden fruit. So the fruit of the tree of knowledge, no specification as to what kind of fruit it was. So let's just get that straight right at the beginning. Eve was not the one that had the apple. They're yummy. I mean, where can you get such a fabulous package? You can hold it in your hand. You don't have to wrap it. You don't have to put it in, you know, Tupperware. You can carry it around in your pocket. It's delicious. It's low in calories. It's crispy. It's juicy. It's colorful. And it's got so many nutritive benefits. I don't know if I can tell you about all of them in the little bit of time that we have. But in the United States, as well as in most industrialized countries, cardiovascular disease and cancer are ranked as two of the leading causes of death. And we know that both diseases are linked to lifestyle choices, including what you eat. You know, it's been estimated that up to a third of all the cancers could be eliminated simply because, or never started, simply because we change our diet. And so apples are going to come into the beautiful picture around that, because there have been so many dietary studies now. Of 156 dietary studies, 128 of them said that fruits and vegetables have a significant protective effect against a variety of cancers. People who consume low amounts of fruits and vegetables are twice as likely to have a cancer as compared to those who eat the highest amount of fruits and vegetables. You know, I don't think that there's any statistic that is more meaningful than that sentence. Hear it again. People who eat the least amount of fruits and vegetables are twice as likely to have a cancer as people who ate the most fruits and vegetables. So when we look at apples and the tremendous benefit that they give us, it's in a whole lot of different categories. But what we understand about apples is that their benefits come from these categories called phytochemicals. You know, scientists know that plants possess thousands of bioactive compounds that are called phytochemicals. And those are the things that impart the health benefits when we eat them. We can protect the eye against macular degeneration when we have the spinach salad that I had for dinner last night, with my dinner last night. Phytochemicals may be partially responsible for the excellent health that is seen in people who eat large amounts of plant foods. Over thousands of years, plants have developed powerful protective systems. In fact, the oldest living organisms on the earth are plants, specifically trees. Plants just can't get up and run away from harmful predators or from too much sunshine or from insects or from injuries or from insults. So plants develop compounds to protect themselves. They can't develop fangs and claws, although some of them develop thorns, and I sure saw that yesterday when I was trimming my key lime tree, because one of them got me under my fingernail and it is tender today. But plants use phytochemicals to protect themselves instead of fangs and claws. And many of these phytochemicals are pigments that are concentrated in the plant peel, and they are what's responsible for the beautiful colors, from the deep blue of the blueberries to the rich red of apples. This defense system is used for all sorts of things. You know, it may act as a sunscreen to protect the fruit from being hurt by the ultraviolet light. It may be a natural pesticide. It causes the bugs to reject that particular food. So plants make berries really colorful to attract birds that will turn around and disperse its seeds so that it continues to thrive. You know, before birds make their long journey south, they switch from a diet of insects to berries And then those berries get seeds get spread as they fly south. So phytochemicals are not classified as nutrients are, like vitamin C and iron, which have been established as essential for human health. Yet phytochemicals provide benefits that are beyond even the power of some of those nutrients that we know well. Phytochemicals are compounds, and plants go through a secondary metabolism in order to produce these phytochemicals. So when phytochemical research first took off, the emphasis was on total antioxidant capacity as it was measured in a test tube. This was resulted in a race to see which food, from blueberries to walnuts to coffee, contained the highest levels of antioxidants. But it turns out that antioxidants are really important. They counteract the damaging effect of oxidative stress that leads to chronic disease. But antioxidant activity in a test tube doesn't always translate to the same activity in the human body. Scientists know that the benefits of phytochemicals extend far beyond their antioxidant status. In other words, it's not just because a tomato has vitamin C that it's beneficial. It's not just because the antioxidant is present. These other compounds or phytochemicals that are present in the plant can have anti-inflammatory effects. They can reduce the risk of heart disease and cancer and neurodegenerative disease and rheumatoid arthritis. They get absorbed into the body tissues where they protect our health. One of the things that we've learned about stuff like blueberries is that they're one of the few foods that contain a phytochemical that actually gets past the blood-brain barrier and gets into the brain tissue, and that's one of the reasons that blueberries are associated with cognitive protection. That's actually true with all the dark-colored berries, blackberries, raspberries that I had with my breakfast this morning. The latest frontier in phytochemical research is to explore how the bacteria in your gut may convert these phytochemicals into other bioactive compounds. And since every person has their own little distinctive mix of good guy bacteria populating their gut, there may be unique responses of the phytochemicals in the GI tract. If you have the right microflora in your gut, you're going to get the best bang from eating the blueberries or eating the broccoli. You know, the modern diet, what we call the standard American diet, or very SAD, is high in meat, it's high in processed foods, and it's low in plant food, and it's low in fiber, and it's been linked with lower levels of good guy bacteria in the GI tract. So scientists don't really fully understand how the bacteria and the phytochemicals dance together to create even more compounds, but they do know that there is a synergistic effect that confers much greater benefits than if we took all those nutrients in a pill. I had a new client in my office this week, and she had a fancy schmancy multivitamin that she ordered online from somebody who's known because he's written a popular book. And when I asked her how much that multivitamin cost, she said $60 a month. And I was like, whoa, I think spending a dollar a day is a smart thing to do when you're talking about a multi. But as I looked on the label, which had about 60 different ingredients in it, better than 30 of them were window dressing. They had some of these phytochemicals listed on the vitamin list, but they were in 5 milligram and 10 milligram doses, which is about the size of a dot at the end of a sentence. So you can't do it with a pill when we're talking about these phytochemicals. When the phytochemicals are isolated from the plant, as in the case of supplements, they often don't produce the same health benefits that occur when you eat the whole plant, which may have tens or hundreds of other bioactive phytochemicals in addition to its vitamins and minerals. You know, today's diet is a really far cry from our ancestors' diet. They've got that new show starting tonight about people who lived 85 million years ago. You know, they send them back in time to start over again. And there's dinosaurs, in the show. It ought to make some of the fundamentalists really happy to see people and dinosaurs together. But I'm going to be interested to see if they highlight the fact that our ancestors ate a huge variety of colorful plant foods, something we don't get today from neon-colored yogurt and bright yellow macaroni and cheese in a box. So researchers are going to continue to unveil all of the mysteries of how phytochemicals work in your body. But, you know, one thing we know, eat more plants. Eat more plants gives us an incredible cornucopia of health benefits. And since apple is the primary plant of the fall, we want to endorse that because, you know, when you pick up an apple, you got something between 50 and 80 calories. And it's got this wonderful fiber called pectin. It's a soluble fiber. And this fiber, probably 2 or 3 grams in every apple. And you need about 25 grams a day. So, you know, have an apple first thing in the morning. And you've already got 10% of the fiber that you need in a day. Pectin is a part of that fiber. And so it was thought, and this is a perfect example of how you can't make the whole as the sum of its parts, whereas the whole is more valuable than the sum of its parts. Did that make any sense at all to those of you mathematically bound? When the pectin, which is the special fiber that is present in apples, was isolated and people took pectin by itself, it didn't have the same value as the pectin that was present in the apple. So it shows that the fiber alone doesn't explain the benefits of the apple, because it was thought that the pectin was the reason that eating apples on a regular basis reduces heart disease. And reduces heart disease pretty significantly. You know, a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease matters a lot in a country where 50% of Americans that don't die from accidents die from cardiovascular disease. One of the compounds that's found in apples are called flavonoids. Actually, there's a number of different flavonoids that are found in apples. And when we look at this list of flavonoids, and flavonoids aren't just in apples, they are in other foods as well, but there are flavonoids and isoflavonoids and phenolic acids and carotenoids. All of these are the different things that can be in fruits and vegetables that are beneficial for us. Turns out that women who have the highest amount of flavonoids in their diet have a 35% reduced risk of cardiovascular events. They didn't find that the flavonoid intake was associated with a risk of stroke or overall myocardial infarction, but they did find that other cardiovascular disease were reduced significantly just as a result of getting those flavonoids from apples. In Finland, they've done a lot of studies because it's one of the countries in the world that actually has a higher heart disease rate than we have here in the United States. And they examined flavonoid intake and coronary mortality. And they found out that especially in women, but interestingly enough, not in men, the use of apples and onions was related to coronary mortality. The more apples and onions women ate, the lower the rate of coronary disease. Quercetin, which is one of the compounds that's in apples, has a remarkable effect on cerebrovascular disease. So we actually saw a lower risk of stroke as compared to those who ate the lowest amount of apples. Onions, especially red onions, I had them on my spinach salad last night, contain quercetin, as does the red skin of the apple. And so this combination, not necessarily in the same meal, not necessarily in the same dish, although apples and onions does sound pretty good to me. You know, we think about that axiom in our language of an apple a day keeps the doctor away. I've told you before, I thought it should be an onion a day keeps the doctor away. But what's true now is it's apples and onions keeps the doctor away. The whole food form of apples is really the way to take it. As soon as you process the apples into apple juice or apple sauce, you reduce the overall benefit of those foods. And one of the interesting studies I came across recently were done on people who just wanted to lose weight. And you know, I keep telling you diets don't work. And one of the things that we have to do is to change our overall choices, because if you go on a diet and reduce your total amount of calories and you lose your weight and then you go back to eating the same way that you did before, guess what's going to happen? You're going to create the same problem. So taking 10 calories a day out of your diet for every pound you want to lose is really the way to go. Now let's follow along. If you want to lose 10 pounds, you need to take 100 calories a day out of your diet forever and ever, amen. Not just until you get that target weight. If you want to lose 20 pounds, you got to take 200 calories out of your diet. Well, they took a group of healthy adults and they had them consume a medium-sized apple, that's about 3.5 ounces, about 15 minutes before every meal. Meeting the rule that I always hold dear, which is fruit, eat it alone or leave it alone. Their caloric intake at the next meal decreased 15%. The apple had filled them up enough that they just ate less food off the plate. The meals in the study averaged 1,240 calories. Now, that was over the day. And so 15% meant a reduction of 186 calories, or more calories than were contained in the apple. So that meant that the person was getting ahead in terms of a net reduction of their calories. Plus, they reported that they felt more satisfied and their hunger was better managed. Sounds like an easy thing to do, especially over the fall. You know, apples are a member of the rose family, as are quince and pears, and there's lots of popular foods, apricots, plums, cherries, peaches, pears, even raspberries and almonds are members of the rose family. And so when we look at the health benefits of apple, we can't measure a high amount of nutrient, an adequate amount of vitamin C, probably 12 or 15% of the vitamin C you absolutely have to keep from dropping over. So the health benefits of apples are not coming from the vitamin C. They're coming from this combination of these phytonutrients, some of which are far more unique than researchers originally found. Camphorol, myrcetin, chlorogenic acid. These aren't things that roll off most people's lips. In fact, they don't even roll off nutritionists' lips. But if apples are red, it's because of their anthocyanins. And those of you that are regular listeners to No Nonsense Nutrition know anthocyanins and proanthocyanins are one of my very favorite words because they're one of my very favorite compounds. And they're largely restricted to the skin. When the red is a deep hue, and not all apples are red, of course there's yellow and green apples as well, but when we get that deep red, there are more of these anthocyanins. Epicatechin is a nutrient that's found in apples. This is a primary polyphenol, and it's this combination of these various nutrients whose names you don't know and probably can't pronounce that apples end up with such an amazing array of nutrients. Fundamentally, what these polyphenols do in the apple is protect them from the ultraviolet radiation. The skin of the apple conducts photosynthesis, but these cells are especially sensitive to UVB light from the sun. And so, in order to keep the sun from damaging the apple, the polyphenols make the apple's natural sunscreen. You can note that amazing polyphenol content in apples when you see their easy browning when they're sliced or bruised. Inside the cells of the apple skin and pulp are these special enzymes called polyphenol oxidases. And when the cells of the apple are sliced through or physically damaged when an apple is dropped, these compounds, these polyphenol oxidases, start oxidizing the polyphenols in apples, and then you see browning on the damaged apple portion. We don't want that to happen. When we talk about the fact that one bad apple can spoil the whole barrel or the whole bunch, it's because when they're damaged, they start releasing large amounts of ethylene gas, and then that affects the undamaged apples. These polyphenols in apples function as antioxidants. So this is particularly beneficial in decreasing the oxidation of the fats that are in our cell membranes. You know, one of the things that happens to us as we age is we oxidize fat. It's called lipid peroxidation. We oxidize these fats in the membranes of the cells that line our blood vessels, and that's how we start having atherosclerosis and other cardiovascular problems. One of the reasons that apple's strong antioxidant benefits lower the risk of asthma in a number of studies and powerfully lower the risk of lung cancer is because of this polyphenol composition. It may not be a lot, there may only be a few milligrams of it, but it's still important because between the vitamin C and the other polyphenols, we stop the rancidification of the fats. Now, when we look at that in terms of lungs, what we find out is that when people eat green leafy vegetables, fruit, dark yellow orange vegetables, citrus, they have lower rates of diseases across the board. Lower rates of coronary heart disease, lower rates of cataracts, lower rates of cancers, of Alzheimer's, and even asthma. But the thing that is incredible in terms of apples was the reduction in lung cancers. Apple consumption has a reduced risk of cancer across the board, but especially of lung cancer, which is the single biggest cancer killer that we have in America. In Hawaii, they did an apple and onion study again, and they found that that combination had the greatest reduced risk of lung cancer in both men and women. There was a 40 to 50% reduction in the risk of lung cancer of the people who ate the most apples, the most onions, and the most white grapefruit, as compared to people who ate the least amount of these foods. And you have to remember, you don't have to be a smoker to get lung cancer. We're exposed to so many toxic compounds in the atmosphere today, in the environment. You're driving to work and you're behind, you know, a vehicle that's got a big old plume of black smoke coming out of it, then you know that your lungs are being exposed. So when we look at not only lung cancer, but asthma and other pulmonary function, we've seen that apples are related to an improvement in pulmonary function. Australia did a beautiful study on apples and pears and showed that the highest consumption reduced the risk of asthma. It reduced the risk of bronchial hypersensitivity. But total fruit and vegetable intake was not associated with a risk in reduced risk of asthma. It was specifically apples and pears. So whether it's the vitamin E or the vitamin C or the retinol or the beta carotene or whatever, it wasn't that consumption. It seemed to be the synergy of all of these nutrients that are together in the apple. In Britain, they did the same thing. Apple intake showed a stronger inverse relationship with asthma than any other food. And it was most clear in people who consumed as little as 2 apples a week. You know, the average American eats about 65 apples a year, a little bit better than 1 a week. But when we look at this beneficial effect of apple flavonoids, we find out it wasn't vitamin C or vitamin E that was correlated with the asthma reduction. It wasn't the carotenes, but it was apple that was whole. In the Netherlands, they did another study that found that apples might benefit lung function across the board. So for those of you that are smokers, whether you're smoking your barbecue grill or you're lighting up, you need to get those apples in your diet at least at 100 plus every year. Lung function can be measured as the amount of volume that comes out of our lung in one sentence. That's called forced expiratory volume. And what they found out was that people that ate the most apples and the most citrus fruit had the greatest amount of forced expiratory volume. People who consumed 5 or more apples a week had a significantly greater forced expiratory volume as compared to those who didn't eat apples at all. So we can see from these epidemiological studies that apples play a large role in reducing the risk of a wide variety of chronic disease and maintaining a healthy lifestyle in general. They are the most consistently associated with a reduced risk of cancer, heart disease, asthma, and type 2 diabetes. So not only do apples decrease the risk of heart disease, cancer, and asthma, but apple consumption may be associated with a lower risk of diabetes in part because of the pectin, the fiber that's in there. Again, we go back to a Finnish study that was done of 10,000 people. And the higher the quercetin intake, which is the major component of apple peels, the lower the risk of type 2 diabetes. So much good news about apples, and now so much bad news about apples. You've heard me endorse the EWG website before, Environmental Working Group. An Environmental Working Group has just released its 2011 list of the most toxic pesticide-contaminated fruits and vegetables and the least toxic pesticide-contaminated fruits and vegetables. The Alliance for Food and Farming did a campaign against Environmental Working Group, a campaign that hysterically came about as a result of a grant from the United States Department of Agriculture. Yeah, your tax dollars at work supported a pro-pesticide campaign aimed at hiding information from you, the consumer, about pesticide residues on fruits and vegetables. So this Alliance for Food and Farming is an organization that's designed to push chemicals that are used to grow conventional fruits and vegetables. Well, it turns out that pesticides were found on 98% of all the apples that were tested. And on some apples, there were as many as 8 pesticides found on a single apple. The dangers of pesticide exposure have been very well researched and very well stated, very well documented. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about all the effects of all these pesticides because they're just designed specifically to kill certain organisms. And remember that when you buy an apple, you don't want one that something already took a bite out of it. The more cosmetically perfect a piece of fruit or vegetable has to be, the more likely it's pesticide contaminated. So this year's list of the Dirty Dozen, apple made number 1. Celery number 2. That really puts the Waldorf salad for Thanksgiving in jeopardy. Strawberries came in at number 3 this year. Peaches number 4. Spinach number 5. Imported nectarines at 6. Grapes showed up at 7. 8 had bell peppers. 9 was potatoes. 10 was domestic blueberries, followed by lettuce, and lastly by kale and collard greens. Right, the very things that you know you need to eat because they're healthy are the very things that got listed as the most contaminated with pesticides. When you hear me on No Nonsense Nutrition endorsing that you buy organic, I will say it 1,000 times. If you don't buy anything but those 12 foods organic, you will greatly reduce your overall pesticide exposure. Apples, celery, strawberries, peaches, spinach, nectarines, grapes, bell peppers, potatoes, blueberries, lettuce, and collards. Happily, when you go up on the EWG.org site, Environmental Working Group, you will also get a list of the Clean 15, the fruits and vegetables that rank lowest in pesticide residue and therefore may be safer to purchase non-organically. You know, if you don't ever buy an organic avocado or an organic onion or an organic kiwi, I'm not going to lose any sleep about it. But I am going to worry because the organophosphates, which we developed from World War II nerve gases, are the most commonly used pesticides in America. And the EPA appears to have its head where the sun doesn't shine in terms of trying to protect especially children. The foods most eaten frequently by children, including apples, are contaminated enough to pose a significant health risk. Apples account for the lion's share of the pesticide exposure to children. Because infants and children are particularly vulnerable to organophosphate insecticides because their central nervous systems are still developing, remember, these things were developed from World War II nerve gases. These organophosphate insecticides are the most dangerous class of pesticides that are used in food. So these bug killers are so insidious in terms of our damage to our neurological systems that is the only first base that we've gotten to in the EPA is their restriction of the use of some of these compounds. Restrictions. Guthion is applied to 82% of the U.S. apple crop and 91% of all the apples that are grown in the state of Washington, which is the biggest of the 36 apple state producers. Apples, by the way, are grown in all 50 states, but only 36 of them do it commercially. EPA banned the use of methyl parathion on all foods consumed by children 10 years ago. Up until that time, methyl parathion was applied to a third of all of the apples that were grown in the United States. When we look at other organic phosphates that are unsafe for children, in every application that we can know, those fungicides, organophosphates, and carcinogens are applied to apples. Methoxychlor is a hormone disruptor. It's a DDT derivative. And there was hardly any usage of it, even a dozen years ago. And now it's listed as one of the highest used pesticides in America. 36 different chemicals that are listed on EPA's high hazard lists are sprayed on at least 1% of the U.S. apple crop. So you don't know when you're buying an apple whether you're getting one that's contaminated or not. It's not that the government doesn't test the apples for pesticides. They do. But they sit on the results for 2 years before they release into the public. And then by the time the information is released, that entire crop has been eaten. So we look at the USDA research. And we look at their research on apple samples, and they found out that before the methyl parathion was banned, they found an apple in the apples that they were testing that would give a child an unsafe dose with just one bite. But it took 26 months until they released that information. The pesticide data program tested 530 bags of apples that year, and they found 35 different residues on 99.6% of the apples that were sampled. The apples in one bag had 10 different pesticides and two byproducts on them, more than any food that was ever tested by the USDA. Be afraid. Be very afraid. If you think you're United States government, United States Department of Agriculture and Environmental Protection Agency is protecting your environment, you better think again. You know, oftentimes I have clients that come into the clinic and they say, is organic really organic? You know, am I really getting the bang for my buck by buying organically? And I say, at this point, I believe that the organic industry is doing a really, really good job of policing itself. They don't want a big smudge. And so the Organic Consumers Association and other organizations within the United States and worldwide, like OCIA, are organizations that are monitoring whether organic is really organic. So when we see that a two-year-old can get more of these organophosphate pesticides in a single apple and a third of an apple you could overexpose a two-year-old. We wonder why we're seeing neurological development issues in small children. If 9 out of 10 samples are positive for pesticides, and again, 99.6 in the last set of tests, be afraid. 5 of the samples that were done in the last series of testings had a product called endosulfan on them. This is a toxic relative of DDT that was listed for elimination by the Washington State Department of Ecology back 12 years ago. It's still being used. So when we look at the Food Quality Protection Act, the Food Quality Protection Act is starting to turn into the food quality protection joke, because they didn't eliminate glutathione, the most toxic of the pesticides used on apples. They simply restricted it. And what they said was that we could have 1.5 parts per million on apples instead of 2 parts per million on apples. Oh, goody gumdrops. They lowered the maximum application rate from 6 pounds an acre to 4.5 pounds an acre. They increased the length of time between the last pesticide spraying from 7 days before harvest to 21 days before harvest if the last application had more than a pound of glutathione per acre. But in fact, if somebody used less than a pound, they could still harvest their apples within 7 days. Lowering the legal limit from 2 parts per million to 1.5 parts per million does not make glutathione on apples safe for children. 1.5 parts per million is 5 times the amount that a 2-year-old could safely eat in a day. Chlorpyrifos, the other of the organopesticides, can be found on children's food and your food, of course. But, you know, I'm worried about your kids. And I know a lot of you that are members of the Holistic Moms group, and those of you that I've spoken to in a couple of the breastfeeding groups, you're the top of the rank as far as I'm concerned in caring about the welfare of your infants and children and trying to do things to protect your infants from exposures to pesticides every day. You know, when we study the urine of American adults and children, 82% of American adults and 92% of children have traces of organophosphates in their urine. Now you know why I tell you don't spray your house for bugs. When we look at chlorpyrifos, the exposure, the studies that were done by the EPA and even the studies that were done by Dow Chemical on rats and rabbits and mice link the compound to problems with blood cells, brain formation, nervous system development, and reproductive activity. In the real world, where children are exposed to these chemicals, it appears that their safety and the risk to them is not relevant to the EPA. I'm astounded when I look at the research that's already been done. And when I add peaches and pears and strawberries and green beans to that list, the ones that typically have high levels of pesticides of the foods that kids eat a lot of. Now, you heard the list before, the Dirty Dozen: apples, celery, strawberries, peaches, spinach, nectarines, grapes, bell peppers, potatoes, blueberries, lettuce, kale. I'll keep saying it so you can burn it into your brain. You know, we don't usually find pesticide residues in bananas and oranges and pineapples and melons and broccoli. But I can't tell you I've ever seen a kid that eats more broccoli than they do apples. When you go up on foodnews.org, you're going to find some of the latest information on pesticide test results. But You know, every dollar you spend at the grocery store is a vote. It's a vote for the future of the food supply in America. It's a vote for what kind of food you want, what kind of food you want to feed your kids. So, yes, there are a few bad apples that are out there. And when we look at laboratory analysis from any year, we're going to find anywhere from 84 to 99% of apples being contaminated with pesticides. I want you to eat them. I want you to eat them regularly because they still reduce your risk of asthma and cancer and heart disease and diabetes. But I want you to eat them organically. And in fact, some days I want you to eat them all day long. Over 50 years ago, Edgar Cayce recommended something called the Apple Fast. And during the years that I lived in Sedona and Flagstaff and had apples in my yard and right up the road from me, and, you know, from being a Florida kid where I'd never seen an apple on a tree until I moved to Arizona, I sure enjoyed the heck out of walking out in the front yard and taking an apple right off the tree, an organic apple, I'm happy to say. And enjoying that apple as close to its being alive as it could possibly be. And so I followed Cayce's recommendation of the Apple Fast and did an Apple Fast every single Friday when the apples were in season. And that's one where you eat apples all day long and nothing else except water. Now, if you're a caffeine user, I don't recommend that you zero out caffeine or you'll end up with a kick butt headache. But when you get up in the morning, you have an apple. And then about 10 o'clock, you start get the gnawing and you have another apple. And at 11:30, maybe you have two apples. And then at 1 o'clock, you might have an apple. And, you know, I've read on some things that people do an apple fast and they eat four apples. I don't know about them, but I eat anywhere from 10 to 18 of them in a day, depending on the size of the apple. And I used to choose all different apples to give myself from variety. Red Delicious, the most popular one here in America. The Macintosh and translucent apples early in the season. The Rome and the wine sap apples late in the season. I would get all different ones, just kind of trick myself into believing that breakfast, lunch, and dinner were different. And sometimes I'd eat the apple out of hand, and sometimes I'd slice it, and occasionally I would grate it, and every now and then I'd even bake one. But all apples, all day. You're giving your digestive system a rest. And what happens is you get a ton of pectin in there, and pectin is the thing that lowers cardiovascular disease because it changes the low-density lipoproteins, the bad guy cholesterol in your blood. And what happens is when you don't eat any fat at all for a day, your gallbladder stores up the bile. And then Edgar Cayce used to say at the end of that day, take 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Because once you put that fat in, then the gallbladder is going to contract and squeeze all that old bile out of there as a result of the stimulation from fat. And sometimes I did that, and sometimes I didn't. But all apples all day long, it's wonderful. You're not hungry. You got plenty of chew power. You give your digestive system a break, and you know what? This is the time of the year to do that. October and November, you're never going to have better apples than you're going to have now. Apple harvest is fundamentally September and October, so these things that are coming off the tree now, they haven't been off the tree for even a week. And so when we begin to look at the nature of an apple fast, maybe you never did a fast before. And remember, don't pig out the night before when you're trying to make sure that you get enough calories in to last through apple day, because every time you get hungry, you can just have another apple. And when you break your fast on the next day, do so gently. Don't go face down into a pint of ice cream as the finish of your apple fast. Not the best idea. So let's get some apples in our diet. Let's enjoy that quercetin and polyphenols and catechins and all of those good things that are beneficial in apples. But let's make sure that we're getting them organically. Does an apple a day keep the doctor away? Well, I don't know. I think it might be apples and onions. But I would double dog dare you to give it a try. You're going to have 2,500 species of apples that grow in the United States. About 1,000 of them are available for commercial production. So don't just limit yourself to the Red Delicious and the Macintosh and the Golden Delicious. Put in the Romes and the Winesaps and some of the ones whose names you don't know, the Pippins and the Fijis. I'll not list the 2,500 species that are available here in the United States, nor will I list the 7,000-plus species that are available around the world, but they all are just a little different taste, just a little different texture. But you want to eat them when they're fresh. You know, 25% of the space of an apple is air, which is why apples float on that Halloween dunking tub. And that's why they get mealy when they get old, and that compartment that holds the air starts to collapse. So get them while they're fresh and enjoy them. You know, here on No Nonsense Nutrition, we want you to be healthy.